$40 million a year for Alex Bregman to play second base? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Thursday, February 13th. Glad to be back with you guys after a couple days off. This is your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. Send all your friends, firstpitchpodcast.com, to get your daily MLB news. And a lot of MLB news broke late last night, Troy. When I went to bed, I was a little nervous about what we talk about today. But we got news. We're going to talk about Nick Pivetta signing with the Padres in a really weird contract structure and what that means for Dylan Cease and Michael King. If we have some time, we'll talk about the Minnesota Twins, kind of doing catching up on some of the AL Central previews. But first, I want to talk about Bregman to the Red Sox. The deal announced last night, I believe Chandler Rome was the first to have it. 3 years, $120 million for Bregman. So $40 million a year. He's going to, there is some deferred money. We don't know how much, but there is deferrals in there. There are also two opt-outs in the three-year deal. I would obviously, if that's, I mean, that has to be after year one and year two. So at any given time, if he thinks his offense has been good enough to make more than $40 million a year or to get a long-term deal, he can opt out and go to free agency. And the reporting is he's going to play second base for Boston. So do we want to talk about the money first? Do we want to talk about second base first?
Well, it depends on how long you want my rant to be, because if we're talking about the second base first.
Okay. Let's do that.
I'm not as against him playing second base, I think, as you are, just because I know it's been a while. It's been a long time, a decade. But he did come up through college with LSU as a shortstop, and then he came up through the minors. Most of his time in the minors with Houston was spent as a shortstop until he got to AAA, because the Astros had Carlos Correa playing shortstop. And so they – who, by the way, before the majors, was a third baseman. But that's a whole different story. So they moved Alex Bregman to third base, and he's been a good third baseman defensively. He's had a weak arm. Of course, we've talked
about one of the weakest arms at third base, but yet still won a gold glove last year.
Right. And yeah, and he won a gold glove last year, and we've talked about his weak arm ad nauseum. But he's been a good third baseman, but I think that he'll do okay as a second baseman just because he's a true shortstop.
Yeah. And my issue with this whole thing isn't moving Bregman to second base. I do think defensively he's a good player. The one weakness is the strength of that arm. Obviously, you completely negate that by putting him at second base. There is more of a focus on the hands and the transfers than the reactions at second base. I think Bregman's going to be fine. I think my issue is Rafi Devers has been one of the worst defensive third basemen in baseball. I understand you signed him long term. I don't think he has the title, but they kind of consider him the captain, right? But to leave him at third and ask the gold glover to move to second and learn a new position when you already have a guy coming back from injury who's not been amazing defensively at short in Trevor Story, and you have a not defensively great first baseman in Tristan Casas, this could be the infield, like one of the worst defensive infields in baseball. I think Bregman would be the highlight there. Also, interestingly, I think the strongest arm of the four of them is Devers. His arm strength last year was like 48th percentile, so right around average. But Story wasn't good. Bregman wasn't good. Casas is literally one of the worst arms in all of baseball. It's just, to me, this is really one of those, I understand the deference to the tenured player on the team, but from a baseball perspective, the best thing to do is to install Bregman at third and figure out something else for Devers, right? Maybe it's DH, maybe it's first base and Casas is the DH. That means Masataka Yoshida is left over, and that's kind of where you are with this is, right? Until you bail on Yoshida, get him moved in a deal, you have too many players for each spot. But it's just, it reminds me of the Yankees signing Alex Rodriguez as a better defensive shortstop than Derek Jeter and then moving A-Rod to third. And it's like, okay, the end of the day, obviously they were still able to win, but you did weaken your infield defense when you technically didn't have to in leaving Devers at third and moving Bregman to second.
No, I do agree with you on that point that they've made the wrong decision by putting Bregman at second in that aspect, because yeah, Rafael Devers is not a good defensive third baseman, and he's not going to get better as he gets older. I think he's finally about to be 30, if I'm not mistaken.
He's 28 right now. I think he turns 29 during the season.
Okay, so yeah, pretty close to 30, and you know, third basemen who are good at third base, once they hit 30, you know, those knees start buckling, and they're not as quick as they once were. And Toby Keith starts coming out and singing to them about beer for their horses and whatnot. But it's just, I agree on that aspect for sure that Bregman should be playing third base over Rafael Devers.
Can I real quick, just Devers on StatCast, the outs above average, a defense at third base. One of these things is not like the other, okay? 2017 through now, he's at minus 28 outs above average for his career at third. But I'm going to give you, starting with his first year, I'm going to give you the yearly totals and tell me if you can figure out what stands out here. Minus 9, minus 4, plus 18, minus 4, minus 13, minus 2, minus 8, minus 6. What did he do in 2019 to go from minus 4 to plus 18 and then turn around and go back to minus 4 in the shortened 2020 year? Like, what happened in 2019? He was plus 18. I haven't pulled that year yet. That has to be one of the best defensive seasons of anybody in baseball. Did they change the way they measured this? Like, what did he do differently in 2019?
Now, 2019, wasn't that the year of the rabbit ball? So maybe there was just a lot less chances, and the ones he got were super easy.
I mean, maybe he was the 18th best defender in all of baseball in 2018. He was better than Trevor Story. It's just, wow. Like, what are we doing here? What did he do in 2019? Oh, wait, hang on. Yeah, what did he do in 2019 that was, like, so different than every other season? It doesn't make sense to me. I'm really kind of curious. If anybody knows and can explain this to me, let me know, because that's just wild. He had one year where he was, you know, generationally – I'm sorry, I pulled the wrong thing. He was seventh in all of baseball. He was one out above average behind Andrelton Simmons, literally the greatest defensive shortstop I have ever seen play the game of baseball. He was out above average from Andrelton Simmons.
So
what did he do in 2019?
I think what actually happened is they just put Matt Chapman out there at third base in a Rafael Devers jersey, and we're like, nobody's going to notice.
No one's going to know. They're going to know. No one's going to know. They're going to know. He actually outproduced Matt Chapman. Matt Chapman with the A's was only plus 15. What did he do in 2019, and why hasn't that come back since then? All right, sorry. Anyway, back to what we were talking about. Can we get to the contract real quick?
Yeah. So I think I've made it pretty clear over the life of this podcast that I don't have an issue with players being paid, and I don't think you do either.
No,
we have been big proponents that baseball does not need a salary cap; it needs a salary floor. Mm-hmm. So. My issue here is this is a lot like the Roky Sasaki situation, where Roky Sasaki spent all offseason up to signing with the Dodgers saying, I don't have to go to a team that's a World Series contender. I'm going to give everybody an opportunity to sign me, even the small and mid-market teams. And then he signs with the Dodgers, who everybody expected him to do, and really, in all reality, did not give the smaller mid-market teams any opportunity. For Bregman, while it's not the exact same situation, Bregman spent all offseason telling the Astros, I need y'all to give me more years so I can sign with y'all. Bregman, if Ben Verlander is to be correct on these offers that Bregman received, he received offers from four teams: the Astros, 6 years, $156 million, the Tigers, 6 years.
That's 26 and a half per year.
The Tigers, 6 years, $171.5 million.
$28.6 million a year.
Cubs, 4 years, $120 million.
That's 30 per year.
And the Red Sox, 3 years, $120 million.
Which is 40 per year on a shorter-term deal. He said he wanted the long-term deal, and then he took the short-term deal with the most money.
Yep. This was never about the length of time. This was always about the money. And my issue with that is, if it's about the money, say it's about the money. I don't freaking care. It's not going to bother me either way. What bothers me is when you go out and you just outright blatantly lie and say, I want a long-term deal. And then you take the shortest-term deal that you're offered, but it just happens to be the most money out of all, most yearly AAV out of all of them that you were offered. And there's an opt-out after both years one and year two, so it could be even shorter than 3 years. I lost a lot of respect for Alex Bregman throughout this whole situation. And because I have followed this closely with writing for Sports Illustrated for multiple teams that have been in on Alex
Bregman. Astros, Cubs, Tigers. Yeah, yeah.
Red Sox.
Red Sox, right.
Yeah.
Not Red Sox.
Not Red Sox. But I don't like liars. And this was just all offseason. It was just outright blatant lying. This is not even to mention the fact that he's not even a good enough player to be worth $40 million a year, even with the deferrals. There are only five players in baseball that are paid more than Alex Bregman: Zach Wheeler, Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, Garrett Cole, and number five. I don't remember who number five is.
Oh, what an unforced error by you. Oh, man.
But it's only five players. Only five players in baseball are paid more than Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman in 2024 had a 118 OPS plus.
How dare you forget Shohei Ohtani?
Wow.
How dare you forget the non-deferred amount? The non-deferred amount. Yeah. If you go by contract AAV, it's like Ohtani, Soto, Wheeler, Judge, Bregman, because Judge and Bregman are tied at 40, right?
Yeah.
You know, the non, you know, before you factor in deferrals, DeGrom's at like 37 and Snell's at like 36 and change. So, yeah,
it's Ohtani. Insane.
Forgot Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, I don't know how I forgot Shohei Ohtani.
Wow.
Major League Baseball is going to like send a hitman to my house or something. But
nice.
It's from 2016 to 2019. I get that Alex Bregman was really, really good. In that span, he had a 144 OPS plus, with 2019 being his best season. And arguably, he has a case for MVP in 2019. Since 2019, he has a 122 OPS plus. He has not been anywhere near the same player. And it's just, I don't get why he was paid so much. And I also don't like that he lied about the entire thing. So that's it.
All right, let me give you a hypothetical here. If he opts out after this year and signs a 5 or 6 year deal, but let's say that he gets, rather than getting those 20 or so offers or breaking 30 on like a 4 year deal, if he signs for 6 years at $30 million apiece, so $180 million total, and this became a 1 year, $40 million deal to join the Red Sox, is that different than if he sticks around for the entire length of the contract in Boston? Like, does that change things a little bit if he does get the long-term deal next year and this ended up being a one-year pillow deal?
Well, see, that's the thing. If that happens, that's a major if. 2025 is his age 31 season, and they're paying him $40 million.
Flip side, I will say, smaller sample size, but in Fenway, in his career, he's hit 375 with a 1240 OPS. So you do have, obviously, is that going to hold up over 81 games? Probably not. But like, $40 million, he's been really good in that ballpark. If you call him a Crawford box merchant, well, guess what? He's going to pepper the monster with fly balls.
Yeah.
You know, because, hey, you catch it off the wall, that's not an out.
Yeah.
All you got to do is get it to the wall in the air and you're guaranteed to be on base. So, like, I mean, Alex Bregman could just, you know, become a green monster merchant for a year, playing second base to show his versatility. And then, if he opts out, they're in a great position because their top prospect, Christian Campbell, is a second baseman by nature. So they have that, or Marcelo Meyer comes up to play short and they move Story to second. Like, this could work out really well for everybody involved if it's a one-year deal and he can get a long-term deal afterwards while the Red Sox don't block their top prospect. I do wonder what happens now to Vaughn Grissom, right? Is this a situation? Boston has so many options at second base. David Hamilton can play it. Romy Gonzalez can play it. Is this something where, like, I'm assuming they're going to end up putting Vaughn Grissom in the minors to start the year? And if you had to decide, do we want Vaughn Grissom to come up or do we want Christian Campbell to come up? If so, let's say Bregman was hurt and unavailable, you're probably calling up the top prospect in Campbell, provided he hasn't looked terrible in AAA. And so does that mean that the guy they got in return for Chris Sale and a year's worth of salary is now expendable? And if that's the case, could that be one of the worst trades of last year? When you think about, they traded Chris Sale and covered his salary in 2024 for Vaughn Grissom, who barely played for them, and then Sale won the Cy Young, and Grissom was so good that they had to pay $40 million for Alex Bregman the next offseason. Like, is that now the worst trade of last year?
Oh, yeah. I had already thought it was, but I think this even cements it now that they're having to kind of cut bait on Vaughn Grissom and move on to bigger, 114
plate appearances for Grissom last year, 465 OPS.
Yeah.
I've not seen your swing. I think you could maybe do a 465 OPS. I don't think people realize that's not good.
No.
I mean, a 465 slug is good. A 465 OPS is dreadful. And he was hurt a lot of the year, right? He suffered a hip flexor strain when he was at a defensive camp with Trevor Story and all that stuff. Was never healthy all year. But, like, to potentially have to cut bait on Vaughn Grissom a year after signing is wild.
Speaking of hip flexor strains, you know what else we have to talk about today that we completely forgot about?
What?
Anthony Rendon's having hip surgery.
Oh my God, Anthony Rendon. I don't even know if it's worth. Okay. Let's get it out of the way. It was announced by GM Perry Minajian of the Angels that Rendon's having surgery for a hip issue. It's going to be a long-term absence, so he could conceivably be done. Anthony Rendon may not play for the Angels again. I think there's 2 years left on the deal. And this is just, 7 years, $245 million in December of 2019. And this is, I would argue, the worst free agent contract in modern baseball history, right? Since 2021 started, the most games he's played in a season has been 58. He will have missed more than he has played. And it's just, like, it's nuts, right? Somebody that I follow did the math on this. If Rendon is done, like, if he doesn't play any more games for LA, he would have gotten in 257 out of a possible 1,032 games, but he would have earned $228 million over that time span. He would have earned just under $1 million a game.
Wow. Yeah, that's absolutely insane. And I think I've also made it very clear how I feel about the best ability is availability. And Anthony Rendon has shown throughout his time with the Angels that he doesn't have that ability. And it also doesn't help the fact that he came out and said that baseball season's too long. It's like, you don't even play 60 games a year. How is the baseball season too long? It's crazy that this is one of, if not the worst contracts, free agents contracts in the history of baseball. Probably not even just in the modern era. I would go as far as to say is one of the worst in the history of baseball. But the Angels have a history over the past decade or so of signing these bad contracts.
Pujols deal didn't age well either. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
And plus the extension to Mike Trout, that hasn't really aged well because he's been hurt throughout most of it.
Yeah. Again, just get him out of center field. Okay.
Yep.
That's all the time I want to give Anthony Rendon. Let's move on. Nick Pavetta. Nick Pivetta had a qualifying offer from the Boston Red Sox. He declined it, which felt like a really bad move. Like when he declined it, he felt like the kind of guy who that doesn't necessarily make a ton of sense. He agreed last night before Bregman, actually, 4-year, $55 million contract pending a physical. But the financial structure of this is really weird. And we don't know about any opt-outs. We don't know about deferrals. There could be deferred money in here. But again, it's $55 million, $3 million signing bonus, which gets paid immediately, which helps him avoid California taxes because he's not living there yet. So that makes sense. $1 million salary in 2025. 2026, it jumps to $19 million. Then he has a $14 million salary in 2027 and an $18 million salary in 2028. He can opt out after year two, which means he would have gotten $22 million for two seasons. He can opt out after year three, which means he would have gotten $36 million for three seasons. Correct me if I'm wrong. This feels like the way that it's structured with getting $1 million this year. They are expecting, we are not re-signing Dylan Cease. We are probably not re-signing Michael King or keeping Michael King because mutual options are never picked up. Because Cease and King together this year are $17.75 million. So this is like his salary goes from $1 million to $19 million. He gets their money in 26. But this makes it sound like, okay, Cease isn't being traded. King isn't being traded. And then we expect them both to walk in free agency, right?
Yeah. It's. I think it's a deal to kind of shore up the back end of their rotation and at a cheap price in 2025. And then spot on what you said to pay him what Michael King and Dylan Cease are getting this year in 2026. Because, yeah, with the all of the craziness that is going on in San Diego with their front office and everything going on over there, it's
which a lot of that's been almost resolved recently, right? A judge did rule about some of that stuff. And so it's kind of MLB approved the control person. A lot of that is kind of out of the way now and kind of behind them. The lawsuit's still active, but they have a control person. MLB's on board. I think for the most part, they're back to business as normal. Sorry, go
ahead. Yeah, but at the same time, that control person was named, I think, either late last week or early this week. So pitchers and catchers. So pitchers and catchers are already reported. So they didn't really have any time if they did want to do anything, which I know they wanted to cut payroll anyway, but they didn't even really have any time to do anything between the control person being appointed and pitchers and catchers reporting. And we know how it goes when you sign pitchers late into spring training. We saw how it went last year with two of them. But yeah, I like Nick Pivetta. I don't think he's an ace, and I agree with you. I think he should have signed agreed to the qualifying offer, because as we've seen, he got less than the qualifying offer would have paid him. But I do think that he's going to be a good addition to the back end of their rotation in 2025. And I think that adding Nick Pivetta and keeping Dylan Cease and Michael King keeps them competitive in the National League West, and they might still be a playoff team.
Yeah, I mean, this rotation now, and this is off of Fangraphs, right? Dylan Cease, Michael King, Yu Darvish, Nick Pivetta, Randy Vasquez. Not a bad 1-5. Joe Musgrove had Tommy John surgery last October. He's out all of this year, and he'll come back some point in time in the season in 2026. So he's not going to be ready by opening day. Typically, that's an 15 to 18 month rehab stint there. But then you look at the off seasons, like, okay, yeah, they're going to have Cease and King leave. I'm guessing Cease is probably the one you tag with a qualifying offer. If King's amazing, you tag him too. He had an ERA under 3 last year in 30 starts. Yep. But you at least tag Cease with a qualifying offer. That gets you back the pick that you lost by signing Pivetta. And then your rotation next year is Darvish, Pivetta, Musgrove at some point in time. You've got Matt Waldron in the minors, the knuckleballer. Just a big fan of the knuckleball in general. So that's why I kind of want to mention he's there. They also gave some starts to Johnny Brito. Like, they've got some options, but it feels like they're going to need more pitching if they lose both of those guys. With how good this lineup is, right? Do you think there's a possibility that they're out of it at the deadline and they move Season King for pieces for prospects then? Or do you think this is good enough and this bullpen's good enough where they end up keeping these guys all year and all they get for them is the qualifying offer draft pick?
Yeah, no, I think it's good enough. I mean, you obviously have to expect all of them to stay healthy, and really none of them have shown that they cannot do that. And so I think that the lineup and the rotation is good enough to have them still in it and at the deadline. And yeah, I really believe that they're going to be contending for one of those wild card spots, if not claiming one of those wild card spots, because I really like the lineup's really good. And the rotation, while it's not the best, I think it's a top half rotation in baseball at the very worst. And so it's I think they're good enough to stay in it come the deadline and even deep into September.
See, I have them just out of the postseason because I'm like the other two teams in the East, whoever doesn't win, right? Braves, Mets, Phillies. And then Arizona, I feel like, is going to be pretty good this year. The Giants have a chance, but like, I kind of have them as one of the first teams out, but obviously a lot can change, right? Injuries to one of those East teams. The Diamondbacks have some more of the injury issues they had last year. You know, things can change, but I think they're a contender. Like, right, they are in the ballpark of competing for the postseason, which is kind of what you really wanted. And that was the point that you were making. So you're right. I'm just arguing to argue for some reason. I don't know why. I don't know what's up with me today. Real quick, while we have some time. Minnesota Twins, right? Lots of injuries last year. They felt like they had to cut payroll this year, which kind of sucks for their fans. I know they've had some TV issues and things like that. They haven't done a ton this offseason, right? They brought in Harrison Bader. They brought in Ty France. They traded for DFA'd former top prospect catcher Diego Cartaya. But all of their big money guys that were potentially available via trade, Pablo Lopez, Carlos Correa, Christian Vasquez, they're all still around. Obviously, health is the giant caveat, but like, this isn't a bad team. It's just, it almost feels like the Twins, maybe more so than a lot of other squads, health is the biggest thing here because they have quality guys, but players like Byron Buxton, who you love, and Royce Lewis with just massive injury caveats in their career so far.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that if they haven't, I haven't really kept up with this to be completely honest, but if they haven't looked at their medical training staff throughout the history of Byron Buxton and into upgrading it and spending a little more money there, I think that they should have. And if they haven't, I think that they need to going forward, because if Byron Buxton can stay healthy for more than 90 games a season, they're a really good team. They have a really good offense, but you have Byron Buxton missing almost half the season just about every year. He's played 100 games in his career twice. You have Carlos Correa, who is generally injured also. Like you said, Royce Lewis, he's been up in the majors for 3 years. I think he's played 80 games maybe because of all the injuries he's faced. It's just they really have a good offense. They're just not capable of staying on the field.
It's wild to me. They have four starting players in their starting nine that were drafted inside the top 10, yeah. Right? Buxton was the number two overall pick in 2012. Correa was 1-1 in that same draft by by the Astros. They took Royce Lewis 1-1 in 2017. They took Brooks Lee, the eighth overall pick in 2022. So, quite interesting. They do have backup for Byron Buxton and Harrison Bader, right? So they have Harrison Bader. He is an option. Willie Castro is kind of slotted in on Fangraphs as their DH. He can play a lot of positions, so they've got some utility there. They have guys who can cover a lot of these things, right? Brooks Lee is slated at second base. He can kick over to short, and Eddie Julian can enter the lineup at second if they need to. Like, they have options. But, yeah, it feels like the fate of this team is going to rest on health for the lineup. I do want to give a shout-out to this bullpen, though. I think this bullpen's quietly one of the better bullpens in baseball. Yoan Duran, fantastic closer. Griffin Jacks would be a closer on a lot of other teams. He was worth 2.6 WAR last year through like 70 plus innings, an ERA barely over two. you know, like they added the honky tonk man, Michael Tonkin, big former NL East guy. But like, you know, I don't hate Danny Coulomb, free agent they signed. I think that's not a bad addition. I do think they need more than one lefty in the pen, but like, I don't hate this bullpen. It's just, can you get enough innings out of your rotation to not have to overwork them? Pablo Lopez and Bailey Ober both qualified for the ERA title, which is, you know, not every team gets two guys that does that. Joe Ryan had 135 innings. Semien Woods-Richardson of the super long name had 133. Chris Paddock had like 80 or 90 or whatever. And so it's like, can you get enough innings to not have to burn out that rotation? Because you've got guys in the minors, David Festa, Zebby Matthews, Louis Varlin, like guys that are exciting, but I don't know if you have enough if you lose one of your two anchors who can give you 30 starts in a Pablo Lopez or a Bailey Ober. So like, that's kind of my concern there with that.
Yeah, for sure. And even the projections for 2025 have just Pablo Lopez and Bailey Ober qualifying for the ERA title, which they have Joe Ryan hitting 158, but Semien Woods-Richardson and Chris Paddock are both 130 and below. So they're going to have to get a lot.
Semien Woods-Richardson had 130 last year, so they're not projecting him to gain any in his year, which is wild.
Yeah, and so they're going to have to really stretch that rotation if they want to keep their bullpen arms healthy down the stretch. But yeah, I agree. This bullpen is solid, especially when you've got Griffin Jackson, Joan Duran at the back end. Joan Duran is quietly one of the best closers in baseball. Everybody likes to talk about Devin Williams and Emmanuel Clase. And I would put Joan Duran right up there. If he's not on that same level with them, he is like 1A with them because he's solid.
Yeah, he's throwing 100 mile an hour four seamer. He's got a splitter that's like 97. I've never seen that before from anybody but him. And then it's like, I'm just going to flip over an 86 mile an hour curveball behind that. Like, ground ball rate's one of the best in baseball, which is odd coming from a guy who's a four seam guy, right? Yeah. You always think of the best ground ball guys as those east west kind of sinker slider sort of profiles, but no, 61.7% ground ball rate. Again, one of the best in baseball. I think the best is like 62%. So he's like right there as a four seam splitter guy because it's a freaking 100 miles an hour. He can touch 104, which is just kind of feels illegal, maybe. Like people shouldn't be able to do that, like from a physical perspective. Kind of feels illegal, but whatever. So yeah, I mean, I like him. The whole thing with this entire team, more so than anybody else, is you just got to stay healthy. And if they stay healthy, I think they could challenge for the Central. It's just they haven't been able to do that. And so it's hard to say, yeah, they're going to do it this year because they haven't done it in the last few. And even when they did finally make the postseason, it didn't go well. So I don't hate the Twins. It's a lot of wishful thinking here, I think.
Yeah, and people don't like to plan for or expect injuries, but I'm one of the very few, if not the only person in the world that does expect injuries, especially when guys have shown us time and time again that they're going to get hurt every year. And so that for the Minnesota Twins, you have to expect that because that's what they do. But yeah, I like this team, and if they can stay healthy, they have a good shot at making the postseason.
This has been First Pitch for Thursday, February 13th. If you listen on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell. Tell your friends, firstpitchpodcast.com, to get their daily MLB news and notes. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.